Welcome to the Music Therapy Roundtable Podcast. We are your hosts, Michelle Erfer,
Kimberly Senna Moore,
and Rachel Rambach.
We are three board-certified music therapists who are passionate about our work and we feel we have something to say. Join us each month as we share stories, tips, and ideas about music therapy and working as a music therapist. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, I'm so excited for this episode because for the first time, we have four co-hosts. Welcome on board, Matt.
Yes.
Thank you. Guys. Hello.
This is like a new beginning for the round table.
It does. I know. And it's funny because usually, you know, we have 15 minutes of chit chat beforehand. I think we're like 45 minutes in and now just finally getting around to recording.
That's right. Although in all fairness, we were doing some planning for this summer and some other things so we were kind of working out some kinks.
Yes.
But the other thing that we were mentioning before we started recording was we're kind of interested to see how the dialogue evolves now that we have a new perspective and a new voice. So, Matt, how are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling great. I hope I don't act as a distraction for the conversation. Tangential, so.
No, you'll only add in good things, I'm sure.
Might have me in from time to time. But I'm feeling good this morning. I'm caffeinated.
That's good.
I've had a great breakfast. It's morning for me. It's a little bit later for you all.
We're all in different time zones now, I think.
Yeah, the only one not representative is Mountain Time Zone. So we have Eastern, Central, and Pacific. So it'll make our scheduling a little more interesting.
Yep. Just means that I have to wake up early in the morning, I guess. That's okay. I'm a morning person.
And it is, I do think about that because, you know, the three of us have kids who get us up early.
Yeah, we have no choice.
Exactly. So it's like, 7 o'clock isn't too early, right, Matt? On a Saturday.
I think I did get a text message from someone at like 5 the other morning.
Oh, no.
From one of you. It's okay. I just looked at it and chuckled a little bit and then went back to sleep.
Well, shall we get started with this very interesting topic? It's actually a pretty serious topic this month, I feel like.
It is. Let's dive in.
The usual steps that a therapist takes with a client are assessment, treatment planning, conducting the session, recording results, and repeat. Processing the session and looking at interactions that happened within the section are a way within the session are a way for the therapist to learn more about the client, about themselves, and about the role that music is playing in their client's treatment. In this episode of the Music Therapy Roundtable podcast, we will discuss the concept and importance of processing sessions. So I want to ask all of you guys, when did you first learn about the concept of processing sessions?
Is it bad to say I don't remember? Because I read this question and I was trying to think. I mean, I probably learned about it a little bit as an undergrad at Iowa, but I don't think I and then again, you know, in my internship, but for me, it didn't really get deeper until my graduate work.
Can I ask a question? What can we define processing first and like what that looks like?
Good idea.
Because I think it might mean something different to different clinicians. So when you were preparing for this podcast, Michelle, what were you thinking of when you were talking about process?
Yeah. So listeners, I got to write the outline for this one. So all these questions are probably bizarre because they're from me. But when I think of processing sessions, I'm thinking of when the therapist, after the session, you're not by the client anymore, the session is over, and the therapist sits down and thinks about the session in the whole, everything that happened, and looks at if they had any feelings, any transference, counter transference, looking at taking that step back to look at how the client behaved and sort of reobserving, I guess you could say, even though you don't necessarily, but in your mind, if you don't have a video, kind of reobserving what happened, but you're looking at not only what the client did and all those therapeutic goals and yada, yada, but you're also looking at, those inner relationships between the client and the music and the client and the therapist and the music and all that extra stuff that can come up and, taking it from there on for as far as learning for yourself, if there's something you need to work out with more therapy or with a supervisor or, potential for more growth in treatment with this client or things like that.
I think that's a great definition, Michelle. And I think that it also varies depending on who your clients are, what population you work with. Processing may look very different when you work in a hospital setting as opposed to when you work with young children or if you work with hospice patients. So I think for everybody, that processing process is going to look a little bit different.
And yeah, what I've heard it, I totally agree. And I've heard the other term that kept coming to mind is self-reflection. Mm-hmm. And that's what I sometimes call it too.
Yeah. And I think that everybody does it naturally as therapists to a certain degree. And maybe as we become more practiced in our field and with our clients, we develop a more formal way of doing it, or we have a better strategy for it with our clients on a regular basis.
Actually, what's funny, I kind of observe the opposite in the students that I work with. This is a skill that it seems like they need to learn. I mean, of course, you always think about what you're doing, but there's kind of a and that I do think I agree with you, Rachel. I think that part of it is intuitive and we do it anyway. We're kind of always. Most of us tend to be critical of how we act and behave and do things, quote unquote. But this processing and self-reflective bit, at least with the students I've worked with, there's definitely an evolution, and it takes a while. I mean, really, in what I've seen about senior year going into internship, when they kind of start to get it.
Well, I think I've observed a very similar thing. I think students, when they're first starting out, they're worried about playing the right chords and you know, oh, I messed up my lyrics, and they're very focused on the actual activities that they were doing, as opposed to really looking at the relationships that Michelle was talking about between them and their clients or patients, between them and the music, between their patients and the music, and all of the different feelings and responses that are within those relationships.
And that's sort of why the first question that I had written for this outline is, which actually, listeners, I only really said half of it. The first question I had is, when did you first learn about the concept of processing sessions or self-reflection, which I like better? but when did you first learn about it? And when did you actually start doing it? And that's the super loaded question. And the reason why I asked is because if I were to answer that question, I first learned about this concept in undergrad, and it was something that in undergrad we do all the time. After every practicum, after that session, you talk with your partner or your practicum supervisor about the session, and we had to take journals and journal everything out and all of that. And then for me, I went to work. You know, I graduated, I went to work, and I really never did this again until, sad to say, probably a couple years ago when I went to, did it in a structured way and on purpose more than a couple years ago when I got professional supervision. And I think, I don't know what took me so long. And I think it was just everything you just said about your students, Matt. Like I was just concentrated on the session and getting it done and, you know, the goals and the purpose of that session, but I never really, I was just so focused on that I forgot to take that step back and look in through a different window, I guess. I don't know. Something like that.
I think that's really easy to do, to get stuck in the routine without really carefully considering how it's affecting you.
Yeah. And Michelle, now that you've said that, I'm going to totally change my initial answer in terms of when did you first learn about this? Because going back, it's like, oh yeah, of course. I did the journals and I did, you know, the write-ups and kind of the critiques and things like that. So yes, first learned about it in undergrad.
University of Iowa is breathing a sigh of relief that you're saying that.
Right. Put that out there. I did, for whatever reason, that did not register.
That's telling that we forgot that we know this. This is something that we know and we forgot that we know it, you know?
Oh. All right.
Does anyone else want to answer that question?
And going back to the you mentioned the journaling. That was something that for me kind of took me from being, you know, a very, very new beginning therapist, you know, where most of my thoughts after the session were, and this is going back to my undergrad and doing my practicums, were, oh, I need to, you know, maybe use this song, or I need to be better at playing this song on the guitar, you know, more like the actual technical skills of the session. To when I started journaling in my internship, really taking that next step and thinking in a more therapeutic way. You know, I just wasn't to that point yet until I really started making the effort to do that processing, as opposed to just thinking about how I can improve the actual session and the technique I used in that session.
I kind of think that's what a lot of those undergrad experiences are for. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really getting those foundational skills.
Right.
And it's hard to, or maybe even impossible, to effectively process a session or reflect on it without those foundational skills of actually being able to do the session.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Because if you're focused on, you know, ooh, what's that next chord? Or how am I going to, you know, carry out this specific intervention? Then you can't be an effective therapist. So you're, right. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Back in the practicum days, it's like we were learning how to chew gum and walk at the same time, you know?
Seriously.
And yeah. So doing the, you know, self-reflective, you know, processing is our time to, I don't know, figure out the more.
Well, and back to those foundational skills, it's not even just about the music, but also about developing your clinical observation skills. And that is so important also for any sort of self-reflective piece, because you need to be able to be aware and notice the changes and the nuances that are occurring in the session. And that's another skill that has to be developed.
Right.
And of course, that can't start until you're comfortable enough at the guitar and or piano or whatever instrument you're using to be able to look up. You know? I was just going to say there is that developmental component and certain basic skills, like you are saying, that need to be developed before you can even kind of integrate it into being able to reflect.
Mm-hmm. Right. Those skills are the music therapy training wheels that you need to be able to then become a music therapist.
That's right.
I don't know if that's an apt analogy.
No, I think that's exactly right. And then, you know, those skills just become natural. You don't have to think about how to balance on the bike anymore. It just happens.
Right.
See, I don't think even these are training wheels. Oh, I'm totally going to go with this analogy now. I think you start off with like a tricycle or something like that. You know, it's not even training wheels or those where you get on the truck. My kids used to have these where you get on like this truck and you just push with your legs.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. We can just do this whole visual of the development of a music therapist. With bikes.
The evolution of a music therapist.
That's right.
So why don't we look at why? Well, maybe we did start answering this, but why do you think it's important to take this time to process the session and do some self-evaluation?
That's such a loaded question because...
Is it? Well, do you think... Is it important? Yeah. I guess it's a better... Or, I don't know.
Well, yes, of course. Absolutely. It's just... It's part of best practice. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's part of our, all of our national standards, both for our certification and our standards of practice. And it's, there's an ethical component to this as well, because this is part of providing best treatment, you know, or therapy, or if you don't like the word treatment, whatever that is.
Yeah. And if you don't process, then you're not going to be moving forward with your client. You're come to a point where you just can't make any more growth.
Right. If you're going along as the therapist thinking that everything's just going swimmingly, then you probably are wrong. I mean, if you think that you are, if you think you don't need to engage in that reflection process, then you're probably missing things. And to go back to the bike analogy, it's like you're riding downhill with no hands and your eyes closed. Like in that movie, isn't that how City of Angels ends?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where she's just riding, thinking everything's great. And then boom, that's maybe a downer to bring up how that movie ends. But spoiler alert. But
it's only 20 years old.
Things can come crashing down pretty quickly if you aren't aware of things that really deserve attention in your sessions and in your approach to therapy, really.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also just a way, it's how you can deal with all the things that are happening. You know, with this medium of music, so much happens that you can't see. You know, there are lots of times in sessions that I've had, like in hospice or in the hospital with people who they tell me they're fine, but there's just that cloud in the room and I know it's not, you know, and mm-hmm. just through the music that they improvise and create, it's saying something than their words are saying. And for us through the treatment to figure out what it is can take a couple sessions or many sessions or all the sessions, and we still don't get through it, but you know, I can tell, I can feel that in the session. And so I have to take that time to think about it and process it in order to keep providing good care for the client. And there's just, it's like lint, like you just get all this lint on your clothes in these kinds of sessions. You know, you gotta work on it. I don't know how else to describe
all these different analogies.
I know. I just
the lint. Yeah.
I like this.
Very visual session.
Okay, so here's the big question. Do you really, like, come on, guys. Do you really, honestly, take time to process your sessions? I can answer this first if you want. Oh, no, Rachel stands up. Okay, great.
No crickets on this one. I jump right in. I will say, you know, for me, it can be really difficult sometimes, especially having – you know, a really packed schedule where you have back to back to back to back music therapy sessions. You know, sometimes it just feels like you're on this roller coaster, and I almost have to, you know, afterwards just decompress after, you know, an afternoon or an evening of just back to back sessions. I have to just kind of sit back and let all of these things marinate and really think through, okay, what happened in this session, and go through that processing just for my own sake, just so that I can kind of get these things out of my brain and do something with them. And this actually happened last night where, you know, it was 2 hours after my sessions had ended and I was finally getting around to writing my session notes. And so that was kind of my processing time. And while I was doing that, I was thinking, oh, wow, this happened in the session and this was a big breakthrough for this client. And it's going to affect how our next session goes. And I find that when I don't take the time to do that, then I feel kind of lost going into the next session. So I feel like it's almost a must. Like I have to do it.
So it's kind of built into your meditation, it sounds like.
It is. It's something that just naturally happens. I mean, it's not like, mm-hmm. and I'll find myself thinking about it, you know, outside of doing my documentation. But I think that the documentation kind of gets that ball rolling and mm-hmm. kind of prompts me to really process everything that I need to process about that session.
Sure. I think it's my approach is fairly similar. It's kind of built into my documentation. And while I mean, I'm charting in a electronic medical record in a hospital, so I don't have, I mean, it doesn't become a journal by any means.
Right.
That wouldn't be appropriate. But I've got a section that's just for evaluation where I'm not just reporting subjectively what happened, or I guess it'd be objectively. But I don't just have to report facts. I can kind of elaborate on things that I was seeing, specific responses. And while I don't write everything that I'm thinking, it at least prompts me to go there in my mind. And I can consider things and come up with ideas for future sessions, think about things I would do differently. And, you know, it is time limited because there are a lot of patients that need to be seen, but it at least provides that prompt. And then I often will go back to it when the time is appropriate, either in my mind or I've never been much of a journaler, although I recognize the value in it. And so that's actually something I've been working on getting better at. But I'll visit it just either in my mind or sometimes musically too, just to kind of see what musically happens when it's on my mind, just in my own music making.
I like that.
Yeah. And I have similar experiences in terms of the documentation being my primary form of processing. But really, if there was something that was really stuck or I was trying to figure out or work through, you know, sometimes depending on the situation, sometimes I would go and talk with somebody about it. You know, somebody at the site, a supervisor, what have you. More often though, it was just something I would almost just percolate on. And I would have, you know, when I was out in Colorado, I'd have this long drive and that was the perfect time just to kind of think. And so I would think on my drive while paying attention, of course, but you know, that's when it would be percolating. But I'm changing now too. And Matt, I'm so glad you said that you don't like drink because neither do I. And that was always my least favorite way to process. And I have a lot of friends who really enjoy journaling and I see the value in it. And so much so that actually for my dissertation, I'm adding a field note component, a journaling component, which basically after any interaction, so it's not even after any session, but any sort of meeting, any interaction I have with somebody participating in the study, I'm going to be journaling about it. And so I'm kind of interested how, you know, I'm forcing myself to get into this practice really, because I want to see how then it evolves for me. Is this something that, you know, outside of a research session, I'll find more value for myself personally? Or is it something that, yeah, okay, I'm glad I did it. I needed it for the data for the study, but outside of that, other than typical documentation needs, just that writing or the drawing or whatever, I won't need it. That was a really long-winded answer, basically to say, yes, I do take the time to process. How I've processed has evolved, and I'm making myself try some new things out to see how that fits.
See, I always found that I needed, like how you all were talking about the documentation being your starting point for processing. I wouldn't say that I have the same story. I think because a lot of my time has been in medical settings and hospice settings, something that's the case for a lot of music therapists. You know, I work with people who are good people who had bad things happen to them, you know, a big accident or a terminal illness or something. And that would always so deeply affect me. And so writing my note about what happened in the session, you know, that wasn't enough. I needed to go deeper and really examine how this client's story is affecting me, or how in a session this happened or whatever. And I got that feeling and I always needed to look at it more. And so, and it was when I had been working in those environments, you know, hospitals and hospice things, and not being around other music therapists, you know, being one of the few music therapists, was when I went and got professional supervision. Mm-hmm. I had Roya Rafian, who was awesome, but I'm sure everyone's great, but but having that having that weekly session with my supervisor was what really helped me really process. It was a sense of, it was sort of therapeutic for me. It wasn't therapy, but it was cathartic, I guess, mm-hmm. for me to really hash out and understand what was happening in those sessions and my feelings that happened as a result of what happened, or maybe it was something I picked up from the folks, especially when a lot of my patients were, well, it was just always a mix, but I'd have folks who couldn't speak at all, but I just knew something was up, you know, just that kind of thing, because that's kind of what happens mm-hmm. when you see someone in a coma. But mm-hmm. so for me, the documentation didn't help anything. I had to do more, and for me, it was a more soul-searching kind of process. I had to just get real deep into it to process.
And I'm glad you said that, because I think that's where we talk about, I mean, it may speak a bit to the settings, but I actually wonder if that's more about who our different personalities.
I think that has a lot to do with it.
I'm sure. Like, because I'm a very sensitive, believe it or not, a very sensitive person.
And, right.
And so everything really deeply affects me. And it just makes sense that having a client of any kind, but even, you know, someone with a terminal illness or someone who
exactly
was in a really bad accident and in the ICU for months and seeing all their family, you know, it was just, mm-hmm. it's sad, and you got to deal with it. Working with mm-hmm. kids in hospice care, you know, things like that, it gets to you. And so I needed more. I needed to take more steps to help my mental health and my professional health. Yeah, professional health. Hey.
Well, and
I like that.
I like that.
Well, and I think it's important that you did that. And we've actually had, I'm remembering now, we had Roya on this podcast mm-hmm. a couple years ago, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So it was really, we'll mm-hmm. have to put a link to that show in our show notes. Because she had some really interesting things to say about this idea of professional supervision. And actually, it's very much related, I think, to what we're talking about right now.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think those first few years in the profession, or really in any helping profession, are hard. Because a lot of times we're kind of thrust into these situations, like Michelle, you were talking about, where we see pain to an extent where we haven't really experienced before, or maybe we've experienced it in our own lives, but it's in a much different capacity. Mm-hmm. And so when it becomes your job all of a sudden, and you're around it every day, it causes you to really examine your thoughts and feelings about what's happening. And I think, in a way, your beliefs and your values about what's happening. So I remember in my internship and my first year or two of practice, just really doing a lot of soul searching and a lot of reading a lot about philosophy and religion. And this is going on to it's a totally different topic. We're talking about processing sessions, but I just wanted to validate that feeling of, you know, especially when you're first getting your feet wet as a professional, it does bring forth a lot of mm-hmm. important feelings and questions that are definitely worth examining, and having someone to guide you through that certainly couldn't hurt, you know, someone who's been there.
Right. Cause that, I mean, and think of those years outside of, even just outside of being in a healing profession, those years you're really, starting, I mean, you've done the school thing, and now you're an adult out, mm-hmm. you know, outside of the protective custody, really, of being in school and being in this safe community, the right. custody of being in a safe community. But, I mean, there's a lot of those. I realized that just sounded weird. Because school was jail. That's what it was. Safety. Voluntary imprisonment of that.
Of academia.
That's right. There are times. So what does that say about me going back?
I know.
safety.
Or any of it, right? But anyway, those early adult years, that kind of growth and kind of figuring out who you are as an adult, really, is a lot of that is happening. And so then you add on working in a helping profession, and I can't help but think that what y'all are talking about is very common.
Sure.
Where you really do try to, you're trying to not only figure out who you are as a your professional identity, but also personally.
And really taking that time to be more self-aware and the whole, you know, choosing to be more proactive in processing. That's something that even as a mature music therapist, don't forget to do, mature guys, you know, because it's also easy to get stuck in that rut and be like, I've been doing this for 10 years now, and this is how it happens. It's the same thing every time. You know, you still want to at least have some way to, through your journal or through your supervisor or whoever, to take that time to look at yourself, look at your client from those different glasses, too, because you can always learn something. You know, I know that it can be also easy to just get in your groove in a bad way. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Where you get stuck in a rut, and mm-hmm. that's, I mean, it's not good for you, and it's not good for your client, because mm-hmm. you need to be pushing and challenging yourself and always learning. Mm-hmm. Preaching to the choir here.
I know, because we're the pushing type, like the keep going type, all four of us. We are, seriously. Yeah. It's not a joke. We're pushers.
Yes, we are, which is why we record a podcast mm-hmm. on a Saturday.
Yeah.
My Speak for yourselves. At 7 in the morning. I'm flying downhill with my eyes closed on a bike.
Watch out for those trucks.
Yeah, right.
So to wrap things up, listeners want you to know that we will be sharing even more tips on the various ways that you can process your sessions, along with how to add that special processing time into your already busy work schedule on our premium website, musictherapypro.com. So this continuation of the conversation is only available to our pro community, who also have access to a members-only forum, resource lists, videos, exclusive podcasts, and discounts with select members. CMTE courses are also available to community members at no additional charge. At Music Therapy Pro, we've done the hard work already. Now we're sharing our secrets with you. Join the community at www.musictherapypro.com. Time for the cool resource of the month. And the cool resource of the month is Zite. That's spelled Z-I-T-E. It's an app. And it's available for all devices. And what it does is it brings you online articles based on the topics that you choose. Let me explain. My husband told me about this, and it's awesome. So what you do is when you set up your profile, when you download the app, it will say, pick, you know, check off these categories or whatever you want. So I checked things like crafting, because I'm into that, and music and business and whatever. There's like a whole bunch of things that you can pick, or you can type something in. And then what it does is when you open the app, it's just all of these articles that have to do with those topics that you picked. So it's like better than Pinterest. That's what I think of it as. So it's all these articles, and there's tons of them, and you just keep sliding and sliding and sliding. You know, it does different pages. And they all kind of like float around in this really neat way. And so you can read the article, and then it makes it really easy for you to share the article like it's like a blog post or whatever, to share it through, you know, Twitter or your Facebook profile or whatever like that. So it's been a really neat way to just find things. Sometimes you just want to sit down and read, you know, so you pick up Zeit and find it.
And as always, we'd like to give a shout out to our ProPerk partners. Music Therapy Pro members receive discounts on products and services from Music Therapy eBooks, and that is our newest Pro Perk, so check that one out for sure. Music Therapy Mailings, Wholesome Harmonies Music Therapy, A Perfect Lullaby, the Music Therapy Research Blog, Boom Totes, Listen and Learn, and the Music Therapy Maven. Thank you all for your support.
And I get to do the Sunday Success.
Woohoo! This,
yeah, first time, so let's see how it goes here, huh? This month's Sunday Success goes to Joanne Jordan. So Joanne says, an administrator at a local nursing home that refused to meet with me a couple years ago, stating that they didn't have the money, emailed me this week after a local newspaper ran an article about me. I'll be meeting with her this coming Friday to discuss programming options. So I'm busy prepping for the week and for the meeting with her. Congratulations, Joanne. That's awesome. It's amazing what a little press can do. And of course, we wish all of you success, and we can't wait to hear about the amazing things that everyone is doing.
Thank you for joining us. To read a transcript of the show, go to www.musictherapyroundtable.com, where you will also find links to each of our personal blogs. You can get podcast episodes sent directly to you by subscribing to the Music Therapy Roundtable through iTunes. If you enjoy the podcast, please write an iTunes review. It helps our ranking, which allows us to reach more people like you. So if you have a comment or question, please email us at info@musictherapyroundtable.com. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll talk again next month.